Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
In this edition of the podcast, we talk about a long-awaited punishment from the NCAA and a quarterback from UNLV that set records, and it's all coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're podcasting from the Pigpen in Western Pennsylvania to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome once again to the Pigpen, where we have your football history headlines for March 27th coming up and birthdays of Hall of Famers. But before we get to that, when we watch a football game, we have the expectation that the officials are out there to make the game a fair and level playing field. I mean, that's what we want. We want to let them play the game. You know, let the two teams go at it. They've been practicing all week. We really don't want to have somebody that's over officious throwing flags every other play. We don't want to see it so it's so bad where there's really bad fouls happening and they're not being called. So you got to find that happy medium, and those are the games that we love the most. And that's the games where the officials are almost invisible, but hey, they come out when there's something bad happens and it needs to. That's what it's all about, of making a fair and level playing field. And that's what makes a game so enjoyable to watch when that happens. It's that perfect balance. And when the teams are playing well and the officials are officiating well, you just have some special moments in football. And that's what we want. We just want fairness. And fairness is sort of a good topic going into our first football history headline, because there is a little bit of injustice here, as we'll see. So let's go to that. On March 27th, 1991, the NCAA bans the University of Minnesota Golden Gophers football program from postseason play in 1992. Ed Sherman, in an article he did for the Chicago Tribune, tells the tale of the incident quite well. A former University of Minnesota administrator, Luther Darville, started the practice way back in 1982 of handing out cash to football players. Others in the Minnesota program caught him red-handed in 1988 and stopped the practice with consequences. Therefore, the NCAA felt obligated to do their own investigation, and it took nearly 3 years. And in its aftermath, they laid the hammer down on the program in 1991, not allowing the team to participate in a bowl game for the 91 season. Mr. Sherman brings up some great points in his article. The people that did the crime in both Darville's handling of out the funds and the 1982 era players that accepted them did not suffer much at all from the NCAA penalty. But the legacy players and coaches in the Golden Gophers program that were there in 1991-1992, almost a decade later, served the penance for what their predecessors did so long ago. Dr. Alan Williams, chairman of the NCAA's Infraction Committee in 1991, had a different opinion according to the article. First, he said the NCAA isn't penalizing individuals. The penalties are to the institution. It's always unfortunate, he says, but the committee has before what it has to do. The matter comes down to there has to be a better solution of punishment for violating institutions. And perhaps the first one is a more efficient and timely investigation, not letting it take 3 years. You know, so really 3 years after 7 years of violations, and the kids a decade later take the punishment. And Minnesota ended up having a decent year that year, and they would have made a bowl game. They had like a 6-5 record and were like second or third in the Big Ten that year. They would have made a bowl game, but those kids got punished, and so did their coaches, who had nothing to do with the infractions that happened long before they ever got there. So hopefully the NCAA has learned from that and is doing some things to catch things a little bit earlier and do a more fair punishment to the people that committed the crime. And you can look at such as people like Reggie Bush. They took away his Heisman Trophy, you know, years after they found that he had infractions of violations of NCAA rules. Well, they punished the player that did it, and I think they got it right in that case. So maybe they learned their lesson with that 1991 finding. March 27, 2000. It was announced by the NFL officials that the 1999 season was the first time that the paid attendance reached an average over 65,000 fans per game. It was also the first time in the league's history that the paid attendance reached over 20 million for all games in a single season. Now let's talk about some birthdays of Hall of Famers for this March 27th. And we'll start in the year 1898 in Warren, Ohio. The prolific University of Pittsburgh interior lineman Herb Stein was born. The National Football Foundation website bio says that Pitt fans were beside themselves when in 1916 they lost their All-American center, Bob Peck, to graduation. The team was confident, though, when Herb volunteered to switch from his fullback position to fill the void at snapper that Peck had left. Stein hardly needed much adjustment to the changes of the new position, as Herb established himself as one of the school's greatest two-way players, injecting the squad with enthusiasm and prompting one observer to say, "His play was a combination of the blast furnace, open hearth, and the Bessemer converter." Those are some highly complimentary remarks from a person from the Steel City, let me tell you. Stein's play was so good that he became a 1921 All-American selection. Herb Stein received the great honor of being selected for inclusion into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1967. March 27, 1921, Dallas, Texas. Malcolm Kuttner, the tough University of Texas end from 1939 to 1931, arrived into this life. The NFF tells us that as a college athlete, Kuttner had it all going on. He was big at 6'2" tall, weighing in at 190 pounds, and was very mobile, as shown as he starred not only in football, but basketball and track as well. His leaping ability was off the charts, making for an extremely big catch radius for quarterbacks to launch passes into. Once he caught the ball, he was often off to the races because most DBs could not compare with his great foot speed. Kuttner led the Longhorns in receiving as a junior, hauling in 16 aerials for 237 yards while helping the burnt orange and white to an 8-2-0 record in 1940. The following year, Kuttner was named to the All-Southwest Conference and All-American as the Horns finished at 8-1-1. Malcolm Kuttner was honored with induction into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1974 after the National Football Foundation tallied their votes. Malcolm served his country during World War II and even got a chance to play ball with the Navy Pre-Flight School. We've heard a lot about them. That's a very famous football team there. He picked up in the pro ranks just where he left off in college before the war, as he earned a Rookie of the Year honors with the Chicago Cardinals in 1946. The next year, Kuttner led the Cardinals to the World Championship, and in 1948, he was the NFL's Most Valuable Player. I'm sure you can learn much more about him on the When Football Was Football podcast on the Sports History Network with our friend Joe Ziemba, who is the ultimate Chicago Cardinals historian. And I'm sure he has quite a bit to say about that great player. March 27, 1922, Chicago, Illinois. The stalwart Purdue guard of the seasons of 1941 through 43, and then again in 1946, Alex Agassi was born. The footballfoundation.org tells us that though he was the starting right guard in the lineup, he had the stats of a running back, so we'll be proud of sometimes. Playing for Illinois against Minnesota in 1942, he scored two touchdowns. On the first, he stole the ball from Bill Daly and ran 38 yards to the goal line. On the second, he recovered a Vic Kabutski's fumble and recovered it for a score. This was only the second time in history a guard scored two touchdowns in a game. He was a defensive stud as well, as he was credited with 22 tackles against the Great Lakes team in 1942. Alex earned All-American status in 42, and he played at Purdue as a Marine trainee in 1943 and again made the All-America team. He returned to play at Illinois in 1946 and was All-America a third time and the Big Ten's Most Valuable Player. Alex Agassi received the great honor of being selected for inclusion into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1963. Agassi played pro football 1947 to 1953 and was on three championship teams with the Cleveland Browns. He went on to be in the Northwestern's head coach from 1964 to 72 and the Purdue head coach from 1973 to 1976. The Football Writers Association named him the National Coach of the Year in 1970 while he was with that Northwestern program. So a great player, great coach. Two touchdowns in one game for a guard. Wow. But it happened one other time, too, they say. March 27th, 1963, Santa Barbara, California. Randall Cunningham, the Nevada Las Vegas quarterback, with the great moves and an arm to go with it, is born. The NFF says that Randall Cunningham left Las Vegas as the most accomplished player in school history, as not only was his career best passer and a punter at UNLV, but he also became the first Rebel player to enter into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2016. The first team All-American punter in 1983, Cunningham received the second team honors as a senior, also garnering honorable mention as a quarterback that year. The two-position star broke 18 UNLV records, including career marks for 8,020 passing yards, 59 touchdown passes, and a stellar punting average of 45.6 yards per kick. Randall is only the third quarterback in the history of collegiate football to pass for at least 2,500 yards in three consecutive seasons, and he finished his career with 142 punts for 6,471 yards. After college, Randall was picked in the round number two of the 1985 NFL draft by the Philadelphia Eagles. Cunningham went on to play for 17 years in the NFL for the Eagles, Minnesota Vikings, Dallas Cowboys, and the Baltimore Ravens. The four-time Pro Bowl player also finished second in NFL history for yardage rushing by a quarterback. Yeah, Randall Cunningham, I can remember some great games, especially that Monday night game he had where he just had an unbelievable touchdown. If you haven't seen that, if you're too young to remember that, or if you just want to go back and see it, make sure you YouTube that one because, wow, what a play he had on that Monday night football game for the Philadelphia Eagles. Great quarterback and great set of legs he had for rushing, too. Sort of opened the door for, you know, people like Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson because he had it all going on too, and it's a shame he never got that championship win because he was a good player on some good teams. Well, speaking about good teams, I'm a member of a good team too, as we have our Sports History Network team that just has some great podcast hosts coming out there. I mean, these guys are on fire. I've been listening to some of their podcasts, and it is just some great stuff. You know, Dana Augustor, we've had him on the program. He's going to be on next week talking about the number 24s. He, in his Historically Speaking podcast, wow, he just has some great nostalgic baseball things coming up. I don't know if you've heard it this past week. He went through all the teams in the American League and how they got their names and where the cities they moved in, and you know, talked a little bit about the Pittsburgh Pirates. And he's got a real good one coming up just in tomorrow, I believe, is going to drop on Sunday, talking about the first team that was had all black and Latino players on it, the Pittsburgh Pirates in 1971. I can't wait to hear that one. It is a good one, I'm sure, especially if you're a Pirates fan or not. I'm a Pirates fan, so I love hearing about it, but it's just a great piece of history there. He always does a nice job. We have, you know, other great people out there too. You know, I was just listening to John Davis's podcast on Sports History Network, and JD has just has some great coaches on and just talks. He's talking about relationships now with his podcast, and he really sticks to topic, has some great guests on, and you really get some insight from coaches, you know, from the high school, college, and the pro level that he has on the show all the time. And John has a real interesting study he's doing right now, and he's trying to help matters, but he's keeps mentioning that he has seen a trend where, or a study, I'm sorry, that we're losing athletes stop playing sports at 13. That's a big drop-off point. And it'd be interesting to see what he comes up with. I'm sure probably video games and things like that are cutting into it. But he's trying to work with parents and work with the players to maybe correct that and, you know, get that age level up so these kids are playing the games well into high school and, you know, get all that athleticism, get these kids, get them exercise, and, you know, maybe help fight some of the problems we have in this country, you know, with obesity and unhealthiness, and, you know, cure some of those ills of the country, because we definitely need it. We need it around the world, and guys like JD are definitely in there trying to help out. So make sure you give him a listen too, as well as, you know, like I said, we have about 20 different podcasters on Sports History Network. Make sure you check them out, and make sure you check out our podcast tomorrow, because we come each and every day to you. And tomorrow on March 28th, we are going to be having a doubleheader. We'll have that special bonus thing where we'll have our football by numbers coming out. And we have the number 22s with Oz Davis once again. Great discussion on the great number 22s of the game in NFL history. And so make sure you listen to that as well as your football history headlines. So we'll have our shorter thing with the birthdays and the headlines. And you don't want to miss that. So until tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. PigskinDispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. A special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck, because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.